On March 16, 2000, two sheriff's deputies were shot in Atlanta. Jameel Al-Amin, a Muslim leader and former Black Power activist, was convicted. But the evidence was shaky, and the whole truth didn't come out during the trial. My name is Mosi Secret, and when I started investigating this case in my hometown, I uncovered a dark truth about America. From Tenderfoot TV, Campside Media, and iHeart Podcasts, Radical is available now. Listen to the new podcast, Radical, for free on the iHeart Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In episode one, I talked about securing a weird hip-hop dossier that was compiled by federal and state law enforcement to track hip-hop superstars and their entourages, associates, and record labels. With the book in hand as a young journalist, I decided the best route to tell the story of the book was to actually make a documentary. But I had no experience, no money, and I didn't know anyone inside the hip-hop industry. But fuck it, I started anyway. At that time in 2007, I was fascinated by what they called the hip-hop police or hip-hop cops. And I was also fascinated with how much mystery was built behind this unit.
Even if you become famous, make a lot of money, and have hit songs, it doesn't automatically make you immune to the system of policing in America. Just ask rappers who've been targets of the hip-hop police. Now, when you hear the term hip-hop police, you may still think it's simply a myth, but many people don't know that there are actual units within major city police departments that are solely dedicated to the surveillance of rappers in an attempt to connect artists to local crimes.
In revisiting the film 17 years later, in hindsight, my quest, my search, or curiosity was one part bold, two parts naive, and somewhat dangerous. At that time, hip-hop was just hitting the mainstream. So violence, gangsters, and a certain allure was all a part of the story I wanted to tell. I needed help from people who knew the industry, could get me interviews, or people who would talk. So I traveled down to Miami, Florida, where the annual Source Magazine Awards was going on. To this day, why I went and who I met changed everything. In a hotel lobby on my first day in Miami, I saw this white guy who had a bald head. He looked a tad out of place, but yet I watched as he talked to Russell Simmons, DMX, The Game, basically any hip-hop star or executive that walked through the lobby, he knew him. I had positioned myself in a couch on the corner, and I could just see his energy was manic. So I thought, the fuck? Let me go talk to him. His name was Steve Lobel.
Steve is the one that helped me out, period. Since I came home, period. Always held me down, period. Been my friend, loyal to death, period. With all that be said, now we could go into Steve.
Yeah, you know, my name's Steve Lobel. The plug, the access, the connect, the middleman. At the end of the day, I'm from Queens, New York. I never forget where I come from, and everybody out there should never forget where they come from, because where you come from is what made you who you are today. You know, I had some mentors in my life. One was my father, and one is Russell Simmons. I grew up in Queens, middle class. My dad worked four jobs. My mom didn't have to work. My dad always told me if I wanted anything in life, I need to go work for it. So at an early age, 9 years old, I started delivering newspapers. But we're from in New York. We have winter, so you could shovel snow. I would shovel snow, I'd make money. I would rake leaves. I would mow the lawn. I would bust tables, anything to make money legally. Because, you know, I wanted those fresh pair of shell toes. I wanted that BMX bicycle. As I got older, I wanted that YZ125. Mm-hmm. I wanted that 79 Cadillac Baritz. True. I wanted that 77 colors with T-tops. Mm. You know, I wanted the member only jacket. I wanted the Adidas tracksuit. I wanted things. So my dad's like, you got to go work for it. So either you're going to work for it, and that's the only way you're going to do it. Most people are brought up, work for it, or go take it.
At the time, my habit was to carry the hip-hop dossier around with me in a binder inside my backpack. I took the book out of my backpack. I shoved it in his hands. I introduced myself. and went right into my pitch.
So here's the thing. I'm shooting a documentary. I have this book. This book was put together by the police, the FBI, the NYPD.
I was interrupted by Steve, and he asked me point blank, hold up. You the police? Now, I don't think I looked like a cop, but thinking back now, here's a white kid from the suburbs of Connecticut with a book of 1,000 police documents at a hip-hop conference asking questions. I know, I was simply out of my mind. But Steve, he had a curiosity and he started to read the book. He started to flip through the pages very intently. See, inside the book was not only documents, they had these very crude, almost like mugshots. They were designed and labeled, and it included the record label of the artist. For example, on 50 Cent's part of the book, it was labeled G-Unit Records. On Busta Rhymes' page, it was identified by Violator Records, Jay-Z and Damon Dash, Rockefeller Records, their label at that time. Steve was engrossed in the book. I think it partly scared him, but not enough to stop reading.
Once a marginalized black urban music form, hip-hop now is not only mainstream Americana, it's a thriving billion-dollar-a-year industry. Last year, hip-hop records outsold country music, and the growth of hip-hop sales surpassed rock.
Where rock and roll has decreased, hip-hop has increased.
Damon Dash is CEO of Rockefeller Records. The label is owned by rap star Jay-Z, whose current album has topped pop charts for the past 15 weeks. Dash says hip-hop is popular because it is more than just a music genre.
I think the reason why is just because hip-hop depicts a lifestyle. You know, it just reports what's going on, and people can understand the struggle through the music. It's not just the music.
Now, Steve did two things. First, he started to introduce me to anyone he met as a guy doing a documentary on the hip-hop police. And second, Steve started to show people the book, and people were a little taken aback. Lastly, he told me Monday, after I got back to New York City from Miami, he wanted me to meet someone. He didn't say a name at that time. In parting, Steve requested one thing in his Queens accent. He said this to me point blank. He said, yo, make a list of names, all the names in hip hop you want to interview. Put those names on a piece of paper and bring it to the meeting on Monday. I nodded my head and Steve was gone into the scrum of the lobby. There was a buzz in the air. And as I turned my head, the minister, Louis Farrakhan, was walking through the lobby of the hotel with his personal security detail, the Fruit of Islam. The air was electric. I had never seen anything like that. Farrakhan and his detail were in Miami to meet with Russell Simmons, the Godfather. I watched and actually felt the electricity change in the room.
Gangster rap started with us talking about our condition.
Right.
The drug culture, but in it was something that members of the Jewish community again could use to create beefs between East and West, North and South. It's the same old Willie Lynch thing where we begin to fight each other. So if I can go on record, and I talk, I'm Ja Rule,
right,
and I say something about 50 Cent, then 50 comes back and puts out a record saying something about Ja Rule.
Right.
So a beef comes up. Ja Rule got his followers, 50 got his followers. We meet, unseen by the television cameras, we killing each other.
I'm always traveling, always on the road, and the first thing I do whenever I get settled into a new city is I DoorDash items I know I can't live without. And it almost feels like home. Water, alcohol, a charger from my phone, snacks, food from delicious local restaurants, and breakfast in the morning because you can't cook when you're living in a hotel. DoorDash, your door to more. So download the DoorDash app now to get almost anything from pet food to snacks to neck braces, alcohol, toothpaste, Joy-Con controllers for you gamers out there. Pretty much anything. You can get it. You must be 21 plus to order alcohol and drink responsibly. Alcohol is only available in select markets. DoorDash, go download it. Come on, get it done. Immerse yourself in the fascinating tale of Song of Solomon by the legendary Pulitzer Prize-winning author, Toni Morrison. A mesmerizing coming-of-age masterpiece that has captivated readers around the world. Follow the protagonist, Milkman Dead, who was born shortly after a neighborhood eccentric hurled himself off a roof in a vain attempt at flight. For the rest of his life, Milkman, too, will be trying to fly. As Morrison follows Milkman on a quest to uncover his roots and himself in his Rust Belt hometown, to the place of his family's origins, she introduces an entire cast of Shrivers and Cirruses, liars and assassins, the inhabitants of a fully realized black world. As the New Yorker put it, Morrison moves easily in and out of the lives and thoughts of her characters, luxuriating in the diversity of circumstances and personality. Whether you're a seasoned reader or new to Toni Morrison, Song of Solomon is a must-read that will ignite your imagination and leave you wanting to read more Morrison. Song of Solomon, a timeless tale that will stay with you long after you've turned its final page. Available now at tonimorrison.com and wherever books are sold. The Dossier is sponsored by BetterHelp. I can't tell you how important it is to set aside some time for you and only you. I gotta be honest. A therapist at BetterHelp made me realize that balancing work, family, friends, and personal growth is a choice. You can make it happen. If you've struggled to make a decision on therapy, why not start today by getting more information on BetterHelp and their therapists? It's entirely online, flexible, and adjust to your schedule. So no excuses, Dossier listeners. So come on, visit betterhelp.com/dossier to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/dossier. Go check them out. At the time, I felt like I had made some progress. I hadn't used the camera to film anything, but I met Steve Lobel. It started to feel as if I was making a movie. But I still needed money. And looking back now and trying to remember, I'm not sure how I was paying for this. I was working odd jobs at the time for a magazine and doing some stuff on the internet. But 17 years later, it seems ridiculous that I even had the money to travel and stay in Miami for 2 days. It really feels like this odd fever dream. In terms of money, I made a phone call. It would be the first time I actually asked anyone but my father for any money. But I felt it in my gut. This was a good idea. It made sense to me.
Dick. What's up, buddy? I'm all right. How you doing?
I'm doing okay, you know. Just living that crazy Arizona life. How's New York?
That's all right. So, I found this book where I filed a Freedom of Information Act request for this book that the NYPD and I think the FBI put together that basically is tracking all of these hip-hop guys.
Okay.
And this, you know, I bought a camera up at BMH and I'm thinking, you know, For 10 grand, I make a documentary. I figure at that number, we can't lose money. We'll sell it. We can get another investor. What do you think?
Well, I mean, what's the story about? Like, I mean, the book, it's like a book? Like, what is it?
It's 500. It's 1,000 pages. It's a surveillance book that was put together, and they're calling it, like, the hip-hop cops, the hip-hop police. So it's basically these guys, the NYPD, this unit of detectives are following all the rappers in New York, Miami, LA, wherever they go. So I figure this is a story that includes the FBI, Giuliani, the cops, etc. You know, this is a rumor, but this is proof that this actually exists.
So you got a book. A document, a 1,000-page document with actual surveillance reports on famous rappers?
Yeah, it has the seal of the NYPD, the FBI. It's got some weird seal, something called HIDA. So these are legit documents. A woman in the Miami Police Department sent it to me. I figure I got to do this now before someone else, you know, does it.
But is it like... they're following, like, Puffy and Jay-Z, like, big
everyone,
people? Like
everybody, yeah. 50, Puffy, Jay-Z, Damon Dash, Busta Rhymes, Fat Joe, anyone and everyone.
So then what's the plan? You just go interview all those people and talk to them about
the
whole crazy book?
Yeah, and try and track down the people within the NYPD who started this.
Sounds amazing. I'm in. What do we do? You just need money?
$10,000.
Yeah, done. I'm in. You're going to make us rich and famous, right? Do I get a credit?
let's make the movie first.
All right. I'm in. You got it, buddy.
All right. Thanks, bud.
All right, bye.
Let's just say, at that time, I knew so little about making a movie that I thought I could get it done for $25,000. I did not know what I was thinking. But Rick, a guy who hired me at his publishing company as an intern at NYU, was a true friend. And for some reason, he believed in me. Shockingly enough, he didn't think I was that crazy. The idea of hip hop, the NYPD, the secret unit, gangsters, this was sexy stuff. This was also a time where hip-hop documentaries or even hip-hop stories weren't sold on TV like they are today. At that time, the DVD market was still exploding. DVDs and selling DVDs were hot. It was a real business. So guess what? Rick wrote me that check for $25,000, and I was off to the races.
You know what I'm saying? And the police didn't really like me. You know what I'm saying? I used to fight the police, be disrespectful to the police. So when it came down for me to get locked up, I was in the box. I had everybody was around me. They all from Brooklyn, and they all was talking mad shit. Nigga, what's up? You already know. You talking that shit. You cut my man. You did that. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow we going to the yard. So the yard's like a little, it's like as big as this room here.
Yeah.
So with that being said, I didn't have no razor. I just had got caught from cutting somebody. I'm in there like, police just fucked me up the day before, because when they was chasing me down in the yard, I was running all over the fucking place and I had a razor and there was nowhere to put it. I put the shit in my mouth. I was cool with that. They opened my mouth. They searched me. They did all that. They couldn't find it. Then I thought that they wasn't watching and I kind of like went to go spit it out. And they seen that the guy in the tower was like, he has it in his mouth.
That is the voice of Pistol Pete Torres, a Bronx street legend, a gangster who used to stick up drug dealers in the Bronx and very famously used to keep a razor blade in the foreskin of his dick when he was in prison on Rikers Island. Pistol Pete was not only fresh home from jail. Pistol Pete was the meeting that Steve Lobel arranged for me on a Monday night in Midtown Manhattan.
What I did, I was like, well, I ain't got no, I peeked, I already know what it is. I've been in the box, I've been in. It's not like I'm a new jack, so I'm like, I got this. So I came and I put the razor on my, I put the shit on my dick. Mm. You know, I came and I took the skin on my dick and I put the razor over my dick, nice and gentle, boom. You know, even though I had a little tissue, but it still kind of bothered, so I still put it over my dick and I was like, cool. And it was like moments before, you know, like he's, like the police is like, the CO is like on the next door, letting him out first. Mm. So I'm like, I ain't have it there like long. You know, I'm like, okay, he's coming now. Okay, now I'm gonna do it. And it was like, okay, this shit was kind of, you know, it was uncomfortable. It was bothering me. So I was like, hopefully this motherfucker don't go too hard where he'll pat on my dick too hard.
And
cut me and the shot be fucked. So he was like, nah, you know, come on, pat, turn around. I was handcuffed. We went out to the yard handcuffed, and they talking shit. You know, motherfuckers out there like 2 or 3 deep. Shut. We out here. Shut. I'm like, I ain't saying nothing. I'm just trying to just get out there, get them handcuffs out, and let me get my razor so I can get to with God. I do what I got to do.
Steve Lobel and Pistol Pete walked into a Midtown restaurant. The name of the place now escapes me. And the meeting was pretty cut and dry. Steve and Pete wanted money. I had typed up the list of names that I wanted to interview. It included Suge Knight, Snoop, Diddy, Busta Rhymes, Fat Joe, Jada Kiss. The list was about 30 deep. And if I'm being honest, I never thought these guys could do it. I had a hunch, but this was a risk, a big risk. Next came the proverbial offer I couldn't refuse. They wanted $50,000, $25,000 up front in cash, and $25,000 on the back end. What I did next was stupid. I shook Pistol Pete's hand and I said, a deal is a deal. But I didn't have close to $50,000. I had $25,000 from Rick, which if you do the math, which I'm terrible in, I just basically gave it to fucking Steve and Pete. So now I'm at zero. Now, the other part of it is now I'm in debt to one of the biggest gangsters on the East Coast. So what I did next was a decision that, looking back, could have harmed me or, worse, maybe got me killed. I went to a friend who was connected to the mafia, a loan shark. I borrowed $25,000 at 3 points a week on the street. I now owned a mafia loan shark, $25,000. What the fuck was I doing?
Loyal Dossier listeners, this is Don Sikorski, the creator of the podcast you're listening to. And I've made a decision. The Dossier is ramping up merchandise, exclusive video drops, secret audio files, and other information and access that I just can't put on the podcast RSS feed. So listen up. You can subscribe now at patreon.com/dossier. Go check it out, subscribe, and stay tuned for more exclusive drops and announcements on all things Dossier. That's patreon.com/dossier.